Hey you, yeah you, come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com. Hello, welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, limited edition Lou.
Ooh, only one of a
kind. Welcome to the show.
Mm-hmm.
As always.
Oh, yeah.
How you been, Lou? Here's some two-minute banter for the episode.
Sure, I've been good, honestly. Anna's healing up and everything. She's moving around virtually normally now. We're going to give going to the gym a shot today and, just see how that goes. Not going to do any lifting. Just going to be like, you know, some treadmill work and just keeping like the incline up and stuff like that. Just seeing like where we're at stamina wise and then kind of go from there. Because we have our final check-in in 2 weeks. And they told us around this timeline, we can start like gradually getting back to like activity. So I'm nice. Just kind of excited. The way I'm looking at it is like 2 weeks away from us doing some actual summer things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Summer things.
Yeah.
Some other summer things I've not yet done. We've not yet gone to the beach. We need to do that.
Especially since like Exhibit announced his world tour and he posted like 20 or so of the dates. And I already know of like 10 other dates that got added that are not on the list. So there's going to be like windows where I'm in town, I'm not in town, I'm in town, I'm not in town. So just trying to maximize how much of that timeline is actually to be in town and having as much fun as we can together this summer. Half of the summer went to recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, summertime is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Just my genetic makeup and composition going back thousands of years, being from Okinawa, dude. I love the humidity. I love the heat. I will be outside playing in the sun for hours before everybody will be inside and be like, it's too hot. I need to get in some shade. Hours before I even realize that it's hot.
Yeah.
And that's just how I am. Anyway, let's get into this episode.
That's it.
This is about room reverbs. And maybe we might talk about width in general, but I really think that room reverbs, specific like short room reverbs, is probably one of the most underutilized tools that we have, like general tools that we have that I've been using a lot recently. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. Before we do, I want to give a proper shout out to all of our Patreon subscribers that are on the paid tiers. Thank you to Rebecca Haven, Gary Sheba, John Murphy, Yochem, Luis Hernandez, Justice, Rashi, Tyler, Feli, Daniel, Caleb, Christian, Jared, Floxen, Yannick, Dominic, Elias, Adio, and Jason, Mighty Made Fellows. Thanks, y'all, for subscribing to our Patreon. If you want access to an extra 250-plus episodes and a new episode every single week, just go to our mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive or /Patreon. Both links will take you to our Patreon page. And if you just want some free stuff, we have a bunch of free stuff on Patreon. All you have to do is create like a free Patreon account and become a free member of our Patreon. And then there's going to be some downloadable stuff that you can get from some PDFs and Lou's recording template available for you. So once again, mixingmusicpodcast.com/Patreon. Thanks so much for subscribing. Anyway, this episode's about room reverbs. I want to talk about it. I don't know how long this episode's going to be. I'm always going to say that it's short. So take a shot if it's
I was about to say, take a shot.
Here it is.
You know what? So, we should actually make that one of the free things. We should actually make a digital format bingo card for take a shot kind of thing.
That's so funny. As the designated... never mind.
Am I the one like that's going to have to take shots for both of us? I'm going to be twice as drunk, twice as fast.
No, that's funny because making a drinking game and one of the hosts doesn't even drink.
Yeah.
Dude, I played like Sunday league baseball yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they like had beer. I'm like, oh, sorry. Appreciate it. Thank you. But then I found out that they're not allowed to bring alcoholic beer to the Diamonds or else like they'll.
So they had non-alcoholic.
I was like, hell yeah, dude. This is great. Everybody else was complaining, but I'm like, this is the only way I can enjoy.
And the funny thing is, like, when I think of playing any kind of sport or doing any kind of activity, the last thing I'm thinking of is drinking a beer because I'm just like, that's just going to slow me the fuck down. But I know it's like a post-game thing, you know?
No, dude, it was great.
Just
the carbs, the calories right there.
Oh, yeah. It was
fantastic. Made me farty. But whatever. Everything makes me farty. All right. This episode about room reverbs. Here's the thing. I do think that we're coming out of, I think that we've been out of it for a while, but it's becoming a lot more clear. Musical trends have changed a lot, especially like compared to 5 years ago. 5 years ago, Post Malone, very mm-hmm. washy, lots of long reverbs. Same thing during that time, like trap had a lot more of a dominance hand in the generalized like top 40 big hits charts and stuff like that. Hip hop in general, and it's significantly less now, like surprisingly, like really a lot less. That's kind of shocking a little bit.
I don't think so. I think it lived as long as any other genre does, typically, unless it's pop.
By the way, it's still up there. There's still like a lot of trap.
Yeah, exactly.
There, it's not the same as like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Cultural shifts. And then there's also sonic shifts too. One of the things is there's no longer this like as much Post Malone washy stuff. It's kind of like the market has regulated itself and it's no longer on every single song like it used to be.
Yeah. Recently, there's like a lot of what could be considered dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more. And I do love the sound of dry. I do mm-hmm. love the sound of dry. There's something, I'm going to keep that thought to myself. Never mind, I'm a self-censor. But I do think that dry can be really cool, can invoke a lot of like feelings of intimacy, possibly some reverence even, but also like it can be really direct, really punchy. It's just a totally different vibe. The emotions are not exclusive to what I just said. But one of the things that I think is underutilized and I think is really important because there's some things that sound dry. But let me do like an example. This is not music. This is mm-hmm. not music at all. But I think it's a good example of like what it means when things sound natural is that years ago, almost a decade ago, in the beginning of my audio engineering life, I was asked to do some ADR. I never do ADR. It was a music studio. And one time, this friend of mine owned a company that sold hammocks. It's no longer in business, but it was like bare butt hammocks. And this friend of mine that owned this company was running some people actually might know the company because it was pretty big.
Bare butt hammocks?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, bare butt, dude.
Yeah.
And anyway, they wanted to make a commercial and they hired a video editor and they wanted like one of the employees was the star in the commercial and we did the ADR for it because apparently the on-site recording was bad and it was a small budget.
Mm-hmm.
They did ADR and I had them record in my vocal booth. In my vocal booth at the time, I had an extra monitor so I can play the video that they were recording to at the same exact time. They did. And then what I did is I exported it thinking because they told me that their video editor would edit the audio or mm-hmm. like do all the editing. So I just like kind of sent them an export, dry export with maybe some EQ, some compression type stuff. And turns out that neither me nor the video editor did any mixing to that vocal. So it was full on dead ass, dead fish, super dry voiceover.
Yeah.
Over a video. And it was the most unnatural. Why does this voice sound like he's speaking in outer space? Like it felt unrealistic. It felt like totally fake and it felt cheap.
Yeah.
And it's because there was zero reverb, zero, any sort of sound or ambience from the room. There was no like background noise. There wasn't like something about it. So I learned if we literally just did like a room reverb or added like some very, very quiet ambient noise in the background or like some other sound effects and things like that, it would have been way more natural. But I just remember being shocked of how unnatural it sounded when the vocal was completely dead being recorded in a vocal booth. So, and there's ties for that in music, but I think that in general, when we hear a voice singing, usually we hear it in the context of within a room, even if that room plays an extremely small part. I just think it's a really easy way to like add width, add depth without adding reverb. Because room reverbs are like a second at most, depending on the room and stuff like that. And dude, I use it all the time in mixing. It's probably like my most used reverb as of late. And kind of like, I don't want to call it a secret weapon, but it's like a really nice way to add some depth and width without drowning the mix in obvious reverb.
Yeah. No, honestly, that's actually huge because in this context, we're talking about vocals, right? But when we think of instruments, like let's say a drum, there's a reason why a lot of people really like putting up drum mics in the room. So they might add like a ribbon, which captures the front and the back and rejects the sides because maybe they have like a very long room and they want it to sound bigger. So they want to kind of like reduce the early reflections and capture more of the tail of the room. And it's kind of funny because there are people who argue that like room verbs aren't technically reverbs. They're just really fast delays and reflections. But that's kind of neither here nor there for what we're talking about. But it's because if you were to listen to like a drum set mic'd up individually, you have like your snare top, snare bottom. And yeah, it sounds clear. It sounds punchy. It cracks a little more. You can control how much of the chain versus the top batter skin you have. And that's great. If you have kick in, kick out, you have a little more of that impact mixed in with a little more of the woof of the actual resonant skin. That's great. But when you listen to those two together with like just regular overheads, it doesn't really sound like a drum set. It sounds like individual like hits of a drum set, but it lacks the imaging of like what we naturally hear in the room. So you'll see people doing like bloom line technique and all that kind of stuff inside of a live room where they take two ribbon mics and they kind of put one on the inversion of the other where like they null each other out kind of thing. And then they use that as stereo and it just sounds massive. But that's kind of how we hear things. Like we hear things in a room. So we're always trying to kind of reintroduce what makes things feel natural and lively. And, you know, room verbs, if you didn't have a room mic and things of that nature, is actually kind of great. And a lot of times when we're recording vocals, we're not throwing a room mic in the booth or in the live room. It's just more tracks that have to manage and things like that. And when you're kind of in a speedy workflow, you're not really having dual tracks of like vocal and then vocal room mic, you know. We just usually have a vocal running into a room verb. So for me, a lot of times this kind of comes down to like, you can use it on a guitar cab. If you feel like the guitar cab is like close mics, but it just feels a little too dry, adding a little bit of a room verb on that guitar mic, like let's say it's just a single 57 on the cab, could be the difference between making it feel like it's a little bit deeper in the room in the mix without having to actually change too much about its tone. Like you've dialed in this tone that you really like, but it just feels a little too forward in the mix. Adding a little bit of if you can add a little bit of room verb to that guitar cab mic, you'd actually hear it kind of push back into the mix. So it's kind of a really, really good tool for creating that front to back depth.
Yeah. Most people have Valhalla Vintage Verb, which is
an
incredible reverb. That's like my Desert Island reverb plugin. It's $50 and it's incredible. It's one of the most reliable, usable, creative reverb tools that you can have. They have on that one, they have like color, different presets and stuff like that. There's a room mode with different colors, which accentuates different frequencies. And then the main three knobs or in sections on that one is if you turn it to like a room mode, or even if you turn it to like a hall and then turn down the decay to like 1 second or 0.7 seconds, 0.8 seconds, then you can feel like the weight of a reverb too. Like if you change the pre-delay, that'll like, if you add a lot more pre-delay, that'll make it the room feel different. If you mess with, when it's a shorter reverb like that, like the shape changes a lot, like the attack and the size of the room, as well as the diffusion changes a little bit of the sound too. And those are,
yeah,
the shape and diffusion are knobs and sections that I don't typically mess with like longer, more washy reverbs, but for shorter room reverbs, those are really useful. Same thing with, if you have Valhalla Room, which is just another Valhalla reverb. Not as many people have that
but
one.
But that one dives in way deeper and just rooms.
Yeah, just rooms. It's incredible as well. Same thing with like the depth knob. You can mess around with the depth knob, which kind of makes it like the lower the depth is, the less it accentuates some of those like upper mid-range frequencies. And it does a few other things too. I'm not exactly sure what it does, but it makes it like less obvious. So like throws it back even further. And I really like those. And again, just as Lou said, like it kind of does something that I think is important and incredible and underutilized, I think is the right word.
Yeah.
I think more people should use it.
I think Valhalla Room is my most used reverb, I'll be honest. Because I use Vintage Verb as well, along with other things from different companies, but Valhalla Room for sure, because a lot of times, you know, room tones aren't really something most people consider if they're recording at home or just doing a quick session at a studio and stuff like that. They just kind of have like a template that works for them that give them kind of the creative sounds that they like just to kind of get the record out. And if they like the record, then they send it out for mixing. But an artist could cut 80 records before they decide which one's on the album. So with that said, like Valhalla Room is kind of the one that I use the most on drums. And that's why I was wondering if you were going to bring it up when you brought up Vintage Verb. And I was like, ooh, we should bring up Room because that one is crazy good. Like one of my favorite things to do with Room is create a separate bus for it that it goes to. And then I mix the elements into it if there's like no room mic for drums. And then use that as kind of like the pseudo drum room. And I get that sounding like as if it's the actual room blended in where I think it would sound like if I was standing in the room with that drum set. And then use that as like the hyper compressed, you know, kind of room mic.
Dude, for specifically for drum room two, one of the most, I mean, so Valhalla Room is like my favorite generic room verb. But when it comes to drums specifically, I'm going to pretend like I'm gatekeeping this and like it's a secret and I'm like sharing with you a secret.
Yeah.
I love the UAD Ocean Way specifically. Ocean Way.
Okay. I've been like curious
drummer,
about it.
Drum A or B preset. And then I'll like mess with the mics a little bit. I don't really have like a very specific one, but like just messing around a little bit with that. That is my favorite room sound for drums. If I do it in a send, then what I'll do is like, I'll even send the kick drum through that plugin, but at the send on the return bus in Pro Tools, in the first insert, I'll do a fab filter and I'll do like a high pass and cut out like the sub low frequencies. So it's only like the knock of the kick or the click of the kick that's really getting some reverb and stuff. But I'll like send each individual part of the acoustic drum kit into the Ocean Way and damn. And I'll even like, so what I'll do is I have a drum bus and or a drum folder and a bus and all of the individual acoustic drum close mics are routed to that bus. And then I'll add the return in that folder, in that bus as well. So I'll send the individuals into that reverb and then that reverb is leading to that. The output of that reverb is going to the bus and then I'll compress the bus with the Ocean Way reverb and then I'll smash it and bring out that room a little bit more or as appropriate. And not only, it's really cool because it does do two things. It like adds space and like depending on the genre, if it's like rock or alt rock, it like adds like, it feels
energy.
Huge.
Yeah.
It feels huge. It's energetic. And it's just big in size, but it also it sounds real. So like if you add it to like very heavily sampled drums, mm-hmm. but that are supposed to be acoustic in flavor, like there's a sensation of like random space that is incredibly beautiful with that plugin. I don't know why, and I'm sure that you can get beautiful room plugins, room sounds with other, with Valhalla Room or other plugins and stuff, but this is the one that I've, for some reason, just I've stuck with for acoustic drum rooms.
You know, and you actually brought up something that I do live that I guess I don't really think about it as much because I feel like it's kind of inherent when you hear it, like you know to kind of do that. So a lot of drummers will use like sample pads because certain sounds just don't natural. They're not natural. They don't happen on a drum set, like an 808 clap kind of thing. So when you hear a clap right after like an acoustic drum set and that clap is dry as hell, it just feels off. It doesn't feel like it's part of the drum or percussion group or anything like that. So, like on my board, I have an EMT 250 emulation on it, and I'll set that thing to like 0.7 of a second, you know, just like essentially within the realm of a room. I'll darken it up as much because there's no, for whatever reason, there is actually no room reverb on the board that I have. Which is okay. You know, it makes sense. Like how much more room do you need than a stadium or a fucking outdoor event? Like that's the room sound itself. But when it comes to percussions coming out dry, it's nauseating in the experience. It just feels very disconnected. So using something like a room on like 808 claps, percussion toms and things like that, like those sample based ones. Yeah, you're right. It makes a world of a difference in the sound of it. It kind of glues everything together in the way that some people would describe like, oh, you know, you could do bus compression to really glue certain elements together. Well, you can get the samples to sit a little easier with natural tracks by adding a little bit of room to them.
This episode is brought to you by Uncommon Goods. The holidays are creeping up, just like that one mixed deadline you'd swear you'd never forget about. Don't stress, though, because Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. It's like a cheat code to holiday shopping, making it fun instead of a mad dash through chaos. It's a pretty neat site. I spent some time on there. I was actually looking for something for either the kids or my wife, and I came across something really unique. It was foreign language Japanese learning blocks. The kids are definitely going to love that, and you can kind of get a sense of how unique the website is. It's a really interesting website where they have gifts that you typically don't find in stores. So it makes looking for a gift that feels special for someone a lot easier. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from your parents to siblings to book lovers to football fans to chefs around the world, and obviously to kids as well, just like the thing that I got. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not just copping a gift. You're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Their stuff's handmade in small batches, so you know the good stuff is going to be gone quicker than the Reese's peanut butter cups from my kids trick-or-treating. Plus, check this. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated $3 million so far. That's the kind of energy I'm here for. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/mmpod. That's uncommongoods.com/mmpod for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Yeah, it's very unnatural for humans to hear sounds
dry,
direct without any single reflection or some sort of decay.
Yeah.
Like even if you hear like a bird in the woods, there's like some other form of ambience, or like you can tell that it's far away.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's unnatural. So it makes it more natural. It like makes it human to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love, the UAD. Also in their native, if you're a subscriber of Spark or Native, their UAD Sound City Studios plugins.
Mm-hmm.
That plugin also sounds pretty good too, but there's something magical specifically about the one that I've clung to is like The UAD Ocean Way.
You know, shout out to Mixcube from, I forget who makes the original unit, but I know UA has an emulation of it. But there's a room setting on it, or like a quick reflection setting on it that Mixcube? Was actually pretty. Yeah.
The
or the Time Cube, the Cooper Time Cube.
Yeah,
that thing was pretty cool for like early reflection stuff, or if you were trying to get something that like decayed away really quick and sounded like a reverb. I forget if the setting was called room or early reflection or something like that, but I would use that on snares and it actually sounded really nice.
I totally forgot about the Cooper Time Cube.
Right? I hate to say it, but like at one point it was like pretty commonly used, but now it's kind of like a forgotten piece.
Yeah, I used to use that all the time for like vocal doubles or like as a send for doubles all the time. Yeah, it kind of ruined the Waves doubler for me because I just always thought the Cooper Time Cube sounded better. But anyway,
I think we just added a list of plugins for you to retry.
Yeah, that's kind of it for this episode. It's like just use more room reverbs. Don't be afraid of them. Short reverbs.
And use them in collaboration with your long reverbs.
Yeah, use both. Yeah, blend reverbs. Use both, even on a single bus or a single track. Like, you got anything. Like, use a touch of room reverb on your guitar and some long reverb and some delay. Like, stacking reverbs is not anything to be worried about. The only thing with any of these reverbs is that each setting on a single reverb or each, if it's like an emulating a reverb of a specific analog one that exists or anything like that, like, each reverb has different frequencies or like sonic profiles. Like, for example, plates in general are brighter, right? And so just be aware that if you do use reverbs, both short or long, don't be afraid to EQ the reverbs too. Like, put an insert. That's like one of the downfalls of like using reverbs directly on the track. We always I do both. I use sends and returns, as well as sometimes if I'm feeling really lazy or I only want a little bit of reverb of a specific, or like I have one track that needs a different type of reverb and I don't want to set up a new send and return just for this one track. I'll put it directly on the track and use the mix wet knob, right? But wet dry knob. But the problem is like, you can just put an EQ after the reverb if you need to, but just be aware that EQing the reverb is an option and it's a valid option, something that we do regularly. Yeah. Don't be afraid of doing that. If your vocal has a lot of like 1K and the reverb also accentuates 1K, like either put a cut 1K before the insert, the reverb insert, or after the reverb insert, just be aware that it can still do a lot of muddying up and, it's not, that's why each reverb, that's why there's so many reverbs, because they all sound slightly different. And the thing to listen for, here's the thing, I'm going to give you some sauce here real quick for listeners. There is nothing specific that the engineers are listening for. They listen to a reverb and be like, I don't know. They're doing the same exact thing that producers do when they go through like a kick drum or a snare sample. They keep kind of like filter through until they pick their favorites, or like they're like, oh no, this one's good, or like the easiest one to manipulate for whatever reason. Everybody has different reasons.
Yeah, you could have a favorite reverb and have it not work on the next song.
Yeah, and there's some engineers that swear by changing the decay to the tempo of the song, or using this for EQing to like the key of the song and stuff like that.
Set your pre-delay to 1/8 note of the song.
Yeah, and here's the thing. That can work. But also not following any of those rules can also work.
Yeah.
And it works. Not following any of those that is not anywhere near a objective secret sauce that makes hit records great. That is just that person's need for some sort of consistency, like logical brain not able to cope with the chaos of being random. That's fine. Just like do it by feel. Feel, music is feel. It's not determined by a preset algorithm or combination of things. We are, and I always say this, mixing is so cool because mixing and mastering is like, specifically, I think more mixing is the last step of the creative production process, music production process. Mm-hmm. And it's the last one, the last step and the only step that uses both the right and the left sides of the brain, both the logical and the creative sides of the brain. Because everyone before is like hyper creative and everyone after is hyper logical. You got the mastering engineer, you got the publishers, the archivist, all the other people that like have, that has to do
very
with
administrative.
Yeah, very administrative. So, I mean, outside of like marketing and stuff, which goes back into being creative and whatnot, but like we have this really, really fun job, which also like makes it unenticing to most people because most people are either like this. We're just talking statistically. Most people are either more logical or more chaotic. And there are very few people with high levels of conscientiousness and openness in a single person. Like they're usually inversely correlated. And the data is very clear. The data in literature is very clear on that. So we have a really cool job and we have a really cool way of thinking about things. Some call it neurodivergence. I just call it really fun. And,
I was about to say, I just call it life.
Yeah, dude, it's awesome. So to a certain degree, yeah, I think about it logically. To another degree, hits aren't made logically.
Yeah. How many times... I think we said this on the last episode too, but like how many times is the one that you hated the most, like the one that actually did the best? They're like, that doesn't make sense. Why did this one do so well? It's like, listen, man, not everything needs to make sense.
Yeah, that's I'm not saying this as like a way to flex. I'm just saying this kind of like, I say this humbly, but like not many people have a sample size of clients or like have enough clients that, do well algorithmically enough to like really notice. But if you, once you have like a few clients that like have songs that either get only hundreds of thousands of plays or millions and hundreds of millions of plays, like once you have a client that like that sample size is huge, and you can tell which songs are like very clearly which songs do better or not. Cause if you have a band where it's like, you have a song that like does a couple hundred downloads, another one that does like a couple thousand, like that's not a big enough difference to be able to tell this one was hitting, this one was not. But if you have a song where it's like, okay, other songs only had like 500,000 plays and this one got like 100 million, like that's a big enough difference to be like something happened with this song, right? It's funny, dude, even there's so many times where like I worked on an album or multiple songs and the one that I was not considering this one would blow up is the one that blew up.
You never know. So there's no tried and true process, there's no anything, there's just fuck it, man, does it sound cool or not?
Yeah, for real. Like,
at a certain point, that's the only question you should be asking.
Yeah, I would just, man, it would be so much easier if labels had some gate-kept secret or algorithm to making hit songs.
They wouldn't actually have one hit artist. They would just have 1,000 hit artists.
And also, like, not just that. Think about all of our buddies, all of the recording engineers that have recorded hundreds of songs with a specific artist, and yet they still don't have a single credit with that artist because they haven't released any of the songs that they recorded.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my God, what a waste of money from the labels. Yeah, you know about it too. Like recording dozens of songs and maybe one of those songs
with so many big names
gets even released. Yeah, that's the, so for me as a mixer, like that rarely happens. Rarely ever does a song get to me and then all of a sudden they like shelf it.
Yeah.
Like by the time it gets to the mixer engineer, they've been through the process of like, okay, we recorded 100 songs. Which of these 100 songs, which of the 10 are we going to release? And I get sent that 10, right? But with recording engineers, which you've done a lot of, Lube, in the past.
Yeah.
Dude, that's it. Like, I hope that this song gets released. It's a lot of hoping that it gets released.
Dude, and I remember an artist posting a list of, like, I think it was almost like 100 songs. And I had recorded, like, 10 of them. And I was like, 1 in 10 chance that one of the songs I worked on gets released. 1 in 10 chance. Still.
And then there's
them.
Also the chance that, like,
dude,
one,
none of the ones
one
on that list
songs,
got released.
Yeah, one of those songs that I recorded that got released pops off.
Yeah.
So I think when a recording, as far for you, like, you got a gold record for recording a song with Keisha, yeah. right? Like, I think that yeah. that's like, that says a lot about, like, statistically, that's unlikely to happen.
Dude, we recorded together for almost 5 years. And I think in those 5 years, only 3 songs officially got released for, like, consumption. And the rest of it was, like, TV placements, radio placements, video game placements, stuff like that, which... realistically don't count towards, like, Billboard as much as people would like them to. Like, unless you're talking about what's that one game they turned into a TV series. They always have, like, a crazy good album. I forget. I'm sure somebody knows what I'm talking about, but I think Arcane is based on it. I think the TV series Arcane is based on the video game.
Oh, yeah. Arcane, yeah.
But, like, they always have, like, the craziest album, which does really well whenever they release it. But those are, like, the exclusive. Like, stands out. It's not the rule. What is the saying? That's the exception, not the rule. These things you can't predict. If it was predictable, every label would be highly successful. There would be no need for a pillar artist to be the one to finance all the smaller signees, hoping that the label finds their next pillar artist. You know, we're talking, like, if it was predictable, there would be no need for an engineer. AI would have taken our job already because it's that predictable.
So good, dude. I love the fact that there's, okay, in one way that really makes it hard. Like, it's so competitive and it's so difficult to casually write a song that, like, just somehow connects with people in a way that really blows up. It's hard to, but the fact that it's so unpredictable and so difficult to do so, regardless, like, everybody that complains how difficult it is to write a good song, like, what they don't talk about is just how fair it makes it. Like, yeah. The fact that it's hard and that labels don't have an algorithm or, like, some sort of specific profile of music or anecdotes, or, like, it's not just all marketing. Granted, marketing obviously has some effect and has some benefit to it. But if that had a, even if marketing had a major, major influence to the blowing up of a song, then hear me out. Every single day, all these little artists on TikTok and Instagram, they would not be getting signed. They just wouldn't blow up. And labels wouldn't have to, like, shelve artists and, like, continue to, like, sign new ones. Like, it would be a waste of time.
Their
to sign
budget
it.
Would be so maximized that profitability would skyrocket.
Dude, yeah. If they were able to min-max because they have some secret to the industry, they would not be signing new artists.
Yeah.
And they would not be wasting as much money writing songs that never get released.
You know, when they talk about, what was it, an industry plant was the topic for a hot minute. If industry plants were such a successful concept, then we'd see industry plants every year. We're like, oh, we never heard of you, but every song is a hit. It's Billboard number one and everybody loves it. It's guaranteed hits from this person from album one. Yeah. But we don't see that.
And here's the thing too. And this, again, this is to rub it in the face of everyone who complains about late stage capitalism and how...
Rub it.
You know, how separated and gatekept, or, like, how difficult it is to be noticed in this world or whatever like that. This is to rub it in their friggin' faces, all right? I'm going to be honest right now. If you've been caught, if you catch yourself complaining about this stuff, just remember that DK and Lou says this without a doubt. Both of us have worked with incredibly wealthy Nepo babies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I've got so many goddamn stories.
We have worked with so many incredibly wealthy Nepo babies mm-hmm. that throw money at the machine, throw mm-hmm. money at everybody that works on it. Completely fantastic, high caliber workers.
Yeah.
Great marketers, great video editors, great producers, great mixing engineer, great people. The entire lineup is S tier.
Yeah.
And most of 99% of those Nepo babies get almost less further than the average open micer.
Yeah.
Just yeah. think about it. Just remember that. You don't like most average people don't realize that because most average people don't work with Nepo babies as much as we do.
Yeah. yeah.
And here's the thing, like it's not because their songs are worse. Or that they're less talented. It's because at the end of the day, it really is as unpredictable and ambiguous and paradoxical as we say it is. And that, this could be a whole nother episode, which we've probably just kicked a dead horse. But again, to the average person, what that should do is that should give you hope.
Mm-hmm.
It should give you the hope to realize that, wow, attention is democratized and it's never been more publicly available to the public, and that anyone can pop off with maybe it's related to effort with a combination of luck, maybe it's related to skill, but then you always have like the song memers that like they suck and that's part of the vibe, you know, and then there's like it's so ambiguous and it's the creative people that win, and that should bring hope to you. That mm-hmm. should be hope. That should be hope to you. Anyway, yeah, it's always the people that need a therapist that like can't stop writing songs because that's their coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And like they just literally like they just every day have to write a song because they fucking that's how they don't know how to deal with their parents beating them. And that's like I'm just kidding.
It's funny because that's almost way too true.
Yeah.
Not the beating part.
Yeah, but I mean like this is like it's a bunch of like really at the end of the day, the ones that do well are like they're so uncontrollably neurotic and their coping mechanism is poems, music, and songwriting. Like,
yeah.
And it's just like an unhealthy coping mechanism that they've learned to monetize. Like that's, I hate to say it like that, but that's like borderline more accurate than.
I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago where it's like, sometimes success looks like doing it just because you do it like you need to breathe.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah,
just remember, Michael Jackson wrote a couple hundred songs before he released the what? Short album called Thriller. Even Imagine Dragons wrote like 75 to 100 songs before they released their debut album.
Yep.
And let's not even talk about the songs that they wrote and released before they started writing for that debut album.
Yeah.
So, hey, dude, just keep trucking. Just keep riding. Just keep having fun. I think, again, man, this episode did go too long, even though I said it was going to be short. Again, the secret, the undeniable secret that everybody that does well and has some level of success that they all have in common is that they love this shit.
Yeah.
They love it. No matter how dirty or clean or unhealthy or healthy it is, they just can't help but love music to a childlike depth.
How many times have we seen a big artist say they're retiring and then come immediately back?
Can't help.
And then when they ask, like, so what happened? It's like, man, I retired from the industry, but I still love music.
And that's the thing. And you know what? And this, again, this is a whole nother, this is the weight of another episode. But if music and writing doesn't come that naturally to you, if you're like a healthy person or have different coping mechanisms and you don't feel the need to write 100 songs,
no.
Or if you're interested more for the attention and the fame than for the music itself, or like whatever, there's so many reasons why music doesn't align with people. There's absolutely zero shame in that. You don't have to do music. And more importantly, music is one of the only hobbies that you can do for the entirety of your life. So, I mean, even Beethoven kept doing it after he went deaf. So, yeah. There's no need to stress out over it. Or again, that's funny to say that after we said a lot of people do stress out over it, and that's just how they are. If it's not aligned with you, don't worry. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. Just learn. It's more important to learn to love music and have a healthy relationship with music as like a cathartic release. Learn to use it as a cathartic release and maintain it as a form of cathartic release.
Yeah.
Rather than something you stress out and wonder if you're good enough for.
You know what's crazy? It's something I was told recently from an artist I work with. You know, they're signed to a label and everything, and they've got a big name that's like backing them and everything, that has like weekly conferences with them and everything. Like they're really on top of him to make sure that he does as well as he can. But he is that he writes music solely for the love of it. And you can tell by like the style of music and the energy he puts behind like his performances and everything. But I remember him telling me, he's like, dude, like when I'm in the studio, like I feel like it's so surgical and there's something that I just like, I have a harder time with. But when I'm on stage like that, that's my nirvana. Like when I'm on stage and I get to like perform and like jam with a band and everything and just play these records that like we worked hard on, like that is my piece. That's like that's where I'm really in my skin. And I'm like, dude, I love it. Cause like when you listen to the album and you see him live, it's two completely different sounds. And you could tell which one there's more passion behind. And, you know, I talked to him about that. I'm like, hey man, if that's what you love, just keep doing that. Cause everybody that comes out to see you, I've seen like the same faces show up to your same, set like year after year. Like we know you have super fans even in your own city. So like,
yeah,
we
need to do another episode about this. So if we repeat ourselves in another future, relatively future nearby episode, I don't care that we repeat ourselves. This is a whole nother topic. Yeah. There's also something to be said about the Western and human need to explain things. Like, what makes songs so great? Why do I want to do music? What drives me? Oftentimes, removes people from the natural flow of spontaneity.
Yeah.
So, if you love music and if you find yourself to be aligned with that, or if you have a desire to do well with it, like, don't work so hard to be an existentialist. Don't work so hard to explain it. Because oftentimes trying to explain it gets you out of the flow. Just love it. Just realize that you love it and you don't need an explanation why. Just be there. Yeah. Just have fun with it. On that note, I think, again, thank you so much for listening. We have a Patreon where we talk about specific technical tips on like how to use EQs and compressors and things like that. We talk about whatever on this episode, sometimes technical, sometimes philosophical. We just talk about whatever Lou and I want to talk about for these longer episodes. But James does a really good job making sure that we stay on track with just technical tips and stuff on the exclusive podcast. So if
James
you like,
is
if
the
you
wrangler.
Want that, yeah. If you like that, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive or just mixingmusicpodcast.com. We also have a Discord, stuff like that. So on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast/exclusive.